Taking no prisoners, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Well, I'm back. I was off in San Diego speaking at Turning Points USA event on climate and the Great Reset. I did one of my famous PowerPoint presentations. And the reason I insist on doing a visual presentation to the nice crowd we had out there, we actually had it at an outdoor patio in the evening in beautiful, sunny California. Well, it wasn't sunny in the evening, right after sunset in beautiful San Diego, though. And the reason I insist when I travel and do these talks is to show a PowerPoint is because I want to show people that everything I'm presenting is happening in all mainstream sources. These are not anonymous sources, you know, or hidden documents or secret files. I show them the BBC, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, Harvard University, and I show them all of corporate media, Bloomberg News, everything. They're saying the quiet parts out loud. But anyway, we had a great turnout, great crowd, took a half hour Q&A talking about climate, Great Reset. I was able to talk about this very program out there as well. San Diego, interesting little footnote. When I was out there, I stayed in a beautiful marina and I went down downtown San Diego, walked around. It is not afflicted like San Francisco, San Jose, LA. It does not have the drug-addled homeless and the crime and the Soros prosecutor. I was told by the San Diegoans, if that's a phrase, that San Diego, California, which is just south of Los Angeles, had Republican mayor, city council until just a few years ago. So the theory is they're still running on the vapors of normal politicians, you know, normal levels of corruption we're all used to, but it didn't go woke like all the other cities. And you can tell, I've been to San Jose multiple times, once 2019, once again in 2022, the difference was unbelievable. Post Black Lives Matter, the city was desolate without, you know, no enforcement of the police, Soros prosecutor, crime. Hotels had removable steel gates for people, locked lobbies. San Diego had none of that. So I was very impressed. Anyway, while I was gone, as I was returning yesterday, Bloomberg News, this is breaking news alert. White House renews talks on invoking national climate emergency before the 2024 election. Biden's executive powers could be used to halt exports, halt drilling, and a whole host of energy restrictions that, guess what? Drum roll, please, can bypass democracy. Ba-doop bang. In fact, when I reported on this, when they first started talking in the Biden administration, I reported on the Center for Biological Diversity's legal analysis. What could a national climate emergency mean for the Biden presidency? Well, it would trigger the ability for Joe Biden to deploy 130 new wartime-like powers of the United States president, by which to bypass democracy. Oh, yes. COVID on steroids, this time in the name of climate. Declare an emergency, become a dictator. This is really serious. And they're talking about doing this before the 2024 election. It would be a little thing in the toolbox where Joe Biden could wield dictatorial powers coming up to the election. Could also affect voting. Like, oh, all of Florida needs to have mail-in balloting because during hurricane season, it's too dangerous to get out and vote, especially September, October, because they're going to start early voting now. I think voting starts like 5 years before any election now in the U.S. to make sure we have fair laws of some kind of thing. Anyway, this is a big story. We'll be following this all week. I'm actually hitting Fox News on that. I'll have some segments on that, hopefully tomorrow's show. And actually, Greg Wrightstone of the CO2 Coalition will be joining us later in our first hour here. And I'll ask him about the National Climate Emergency Declaration that, once again, the Biden administration is talking about doing. And of course, we have Earth Day coming up. I'll talk to Greg Wrightstone about that as well. Okay. Well, I was gone, and we had great, thanks everyone at TNT. We had great expert fill-in here hosts and guest hosts and great interaction with the guests and TNT audience. And some great guests as well on the show program. Okay, National Public Radio. This is a key clip. This is CEO of the taxpayer-funded National Public Radio, NPR, here in the United States, Kathleen Maher, I guess you'd say, or Mayor, talking about how NPR sees the truth. This is the CEO of the company, and she's basically laying out a scenario where, you know, truth isn't that important anymore. Let's play clip one.
The hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things.
So she's basically saying, the way I interpret this, is the truth really doesn't matter, but we have to go to a place where we can all agree on a sort of an agenda. And this is where we have to take our media now. We can't worry about what's true and what isn't. If we have a national climate emergency or a COVID emergency or a terrorism emergency or a gun violence emergency or a misinformation emergency, we're not going to spend time. Although, by the way, have you ever heard anyone that pretentious? We're not going to spend time worrying about what's so true. I mean, it's almost like she went to pretentious school to practice her breathing or mannerisms, that sort of the upper ruling class arrogance. She is saying the truth doesn't matter, but sort of what matters is that we're all in this together and that we go along. So if we face a climate emergency, we have to go with that. It doesn't matter whether we actually face it or what the truth is. We don't have time for that. That's not a good starting point. That's not a good way to pursue this. If we say, you know, COVID is a global health emergency, a Spanish death toll scenario is coming, it doesn't matter if that's highly disputed at the time and we have epidemiologists. It's just, it's what the government wants us to say. It's what our billionaire funders want us to say. And, you know, we don't have time to look at the truth. We got to go with what we feel is, you know, what's most productive. And that's what's productive. They're the ones paying us, the billionaire foundations and the billionaires themselves and the big corporate. We got to work with them. We got to go with the big government and the elite institutions like NASA on climate and the CDC. We don't care if they're telling the truth. We care that we're all on the same page. Don't you understand that? All right, I have enough of that. That's NPR, National Public Radio, CEO. She's got a brilliant, wealthy, rewards, awards. She's going to do incredible in our society. NPR CEO, Catherine Mayer, she's knocking it out of the park for the forces of the Great Reset. Kudos to her. Okay. We've seen Donald Trump all over the place show up somewhere. He was recently, I showed you the clip at the UFC Ultimate Fighting, a big fight they had. It was out in Florida, I believe, Miami, Florida, a couple weeks ago. And the audience stands on its feet. They go nuts. He's praised. He's cheered. They go wild. He shows up at football games. Everywhere he goes, people love it. He gets swarmed. Joe Biden wants a piece of that. So Joe Biden stopped by a Sheetz gas station here in the United States because he wanted to replicate all of Trump's magic when he shows up at these events. So here's what happened when Joe Biden surprises the public, unbeknownst to them, and just shows up. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. Don't swarm. Please disperse. Clip two.
Thank you.
chance. Well, you saw it. I'm not even sure anyone recognized him in there. Just some old frail man walked in and everyone was like, huh? Normally in a situation like that, just even the Secret Service activity would get you everyone at attention, standing, all this buzz. Did you ever see anything like that in your life? They could have cared less. Everyone just sort of sitting around like, huh? I'm back to my French fries. Even the cashiers weren't impressed. And there was a recent incident where Donald Trump went to a bodega, a bagel place, and was just swarmed. It was dynamic. They can't recapture, or they can't even fakely invent the magic that surrounds Donald Trump's candidacy. Well, the one thing they can do is destroy any opponents. And this is a fascinating clip 3. RFK Jr. and his VP candidate, Nicole Shanahan, have been targeted by the Democrat Party establishment led by James Carville with intense personal investigations and attacks just now beginning, which tells you that they think they're a threat. James Carville, the Democrat operative, called the VP pick Nicole Shanahan a really strange person. Let's watch clip 3. This is a news report from The Hill about what the Democrat establishment is just beginning to do to destroy the candidacy of RFK Jr.
As we inch closer and closer to the 2024 presidential race, Democrats' attack on third-party candidates in the race are broadening to include their running mates. Independent candidate RFK Jr.'s billionaire running mate, Nicole Shanahan, has become the focus of a Silicon Valley persuasion campaign with the goal of getting her to drop off the ticket. Now, last week, we covered the dust-up between San Francisco Representative Ro Khanna and Nicole Shanahan that began when he pinned a letter to her, encouraging her to step down. Now, new reporting in PUC News reveals that the Silicon Valley campaign extends well beyond the progressive congressman. Democratic political operative James Carville reportedly tried to dig up personal dirt on Shanahan by emailing her ex-husband, Google founder Sergey Brin's first wife. Now, recall that Shanahan's divorce from Brin in 2023 is the source of the funds that have allowed her to help finance the Kennedy campaign.
According to Semaphore, Carville's digging is focused on Shanahan's two marriages. As he told the outlet in an interview, the tech industry is like Hollywood and there's all sorts of stuff floating around out there. I would be totally stunned if she wasn't a really strange person in the eyes of most people.
Wow. This is gutter ball, dirty politics by the Democrats, led by James Carville, longtime Democrat operative, going back 30 years to the Bill Clinton campaign in 1992. He's the one that said you could drag a dollar bill or $5 bill through a trailer park and get any kind of rumors in response to the Paula Jones lawsuit, which eventually led to Bill Clinton's indictment, but not conviction. The House voted to impeach. The Senate voted not to prosecute. But they're going after calling the ex-husband, looking for dirt. They want to do anything they can to do two things: prevent ballot access for RFK Jr. and Nicole Shanahan, and also just to smear the ticket, discredit them in any way. And this is a deeply personal attack, which tells you how much they are threatened by them. Okay. Globalist agenda. This is interesting. Australian banks are refusing to allow customers to make cash withdrawals. This is a news report from Australia. And even the media hosts here, I think it's local Australian news, are shocked at what happened to these customers. This is clip 5. Let's take a look.
Well, outrage in Queensland tonight after a local woman rocked up to her bank to withdraw cash, only to be told they didn't have any. Taryn Compton wanted to grab some notes to pay a tradie, but when she got to the ANZ ATM, she realised she'd forgotten her FPOS card. When she asked the teller for the money instead, she was told the bank doesn't carry cash.
And Taryn Compton's here to tell us all about her terrible banking experience. Taryn, what did you think when you walked into a bank only to be told they don't have cash?
I thought it was absolutely crazy. I thought she must have misheard what I wanted, if I'm honest. How can you go to a bank and not be able to get your own money out?
Taryn, that's what I'm confused about. So what's in the bank if there's no cash? Isn't there, if you open up the safe, what's in there? How did they explain it to you?
They just said, I'm so sorry, we can't help you. There's nothing we can do, we don't have cash here.
So did you think maybe that was a temporary situation? That maybe they were going to get some cash tomorrow?
No, she actually said, we don't carry cash anymore. We can't help you. She did say, if you're desperate for it today, you can transfer it to another bank and try and get it out there, but we can't help.
Was she in on how absurd this was? Mm. Like, did she get it was like you were walking into KFC and they said, sorry, we don't do chicken?
That's an amazing story. And this may be, unfortunately, with central bank digital currency, the whole idea of a cashless society, a Chinese social credit system giving you the ability to spend or not spend money, depending on your carbon footprint. We already have credit cards teaming up with that. You already have things like Bank of America not allowing you to buy firearms, PayPal not allowing you to buy, I believe, tobacco products, vaping products on platforms like that. We saw what happened with the Canadian truckers. You couldn't even go to a GoFundMe, give money to the truckers. They were going to prevent it. So the way you really put the screws on a society is get rid of cash. Now, not only were consumers not have cash, but now in 2024, we've reached a point where banks are permanently cashless. You go in, I like some cash. We're a bank. We don't have cash. What is your problem, man? Why would you come to us, a bank, for cash? Wow. Wake up. Okay. Sorry about that. All right. Okay. Let's go. Clip. This is clip four. Energy Secretary Joe Biden, Jennifer Granholm, being grilled by the great Mike Lee of Utah, the senator, about what impact it will have on global temperatures if we go full net zero. In fact, I'll probably ask Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition, he'll be joining us, what his thoughts on this. But let's watch the part, Glenn. This is part one of Senator Mike Lee grilling Biden Energy Secretary on why we're trying to achieve net zero. What impact will it have?
If it completely transitions over to get to net zero, exactly how many degrees will global temperatures decrease as a result of moving to net zero?
Well, we want to keep global temperatures from rising more than 1.5 to 2 degrees. The net zero is by 2050, so there is time to be able to get there. If we see temperatures rising greater than that, of course, the costs for poor people and for people overall because of these extreme weather events will be catastrophic.
Okay. But let's get back to my question. If we get to net zero, when we get to net zero, should we get there at some point? If we get there, what impact will that have on global temperatures?
As I say, the striving to net zero is to prevent the temperatures from rising more than 1.5 to 2 degrees.
Yeah, it's still not the answer to the question. The question is, what impact is that going to have? We've just talked about the fact that it's going to cost $275 trillion to get there. And we've talked about the fact that it's going to cost the global economy, $9 or $10 trillion a year in order to get there. So what does that buy us? What does that do? Now, you're saying, yes, we're trying to not have temperatures increase more than the defined amount that you just described. But what impact does this have? What does it do for global temperatures if we get to net zero?
Perhaps I'm not understanding your question. I think I have answered that. And the whole point is to prevent these extreme and accelerating weather events. We have had year after year of record heat.
This is the top administration in the Biden for the American energy being asked a simple question. If we achieve everything you want, net zero, what impact is it going to have? Well, we have a goal brought to you by the United Nations, which I've shown you repeatedly, and it's in all my books. It was from the ClimateGate emails. Top UN scientist Phil Jones admitted that the 2 degrees, 1.5 temperature goals that are make up net zero are literally pulled from thin air, that there's no sign. They just made them up. They're political goals. So we know there's nothing. It's just made up. So she's being asked, what will that happen if the U.S. achieves it? And she's just like, well, our goal is, what this is. It's like, no, that's not the question. What impact will all these policies, which are destroying American infrastructure, destroying American economy, destroying American supply chain, destroying inflation for Americans, rooting out our power grid, which the Washington Post admitted this week is woefully sore. America's running out of energy with all the new power demands, and this is what we have. Well, it's a goal, and the UN came up, but we just try. It's everything. We're all in this together. She may as well have just answered that. We'll have part two of that, but we're going to take a break because we want to bring on Gregory Wrightstone, the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. He's a returning guest on our program. His new book. He's the author of A Very Convenient Warming, How a Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. We'll ask him about Jennifer Granholm. We'll ask him about the National Climate Emergency. Stay tuned. Gregory Wrightstone, the geologist, will be joining Unleashed with Mark Morano when we come back.
TNT's Chris Smith.
The latest terror attack to occur in the world. And then an inexplicable violent attack on police, at about 20 police vehicles as well, by the very churchgoers who police had turned up to support. Bizarre, but maybe not as bizarre as I'm about to explain to you. It is ghastly stuff, but do you not think that this is happening elsewhere? Do you not think that with 200 different cultures in a city like Sydney, that these kinds of hatreds, this kind of extremism, are you saying that that doesn't go on? That this is a one-off? I doubt whether you have actually grown up in the southwestern part of Sydney, as I have, because I'm telling you right now, as soon as 200 cultures got together about 25 to 30 years ago, it started.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Lights is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
It's time to switch on
today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining the program now is Gregory Wrightstone, the executive director of the CO2 Coalition and author of the new book, A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. Welcome to the welcome back to the program, Gregory.
Well, good to be on with you, Mark. Yeah, it's been A little bit of Jennifer Granholm goes a long way, but I can help her out here if you want the answer. I've got it right here. If the United States had gone completely 100% net zero in the year 2010, in the year 2050, we will have averted 400ths of the degree Celsius, which is below our ability to measure. So they want to spend trillions of dollars to reduce temperature an amount that we can't even measure. It doesn't make sense. And get this, Mark, what people don't understand, she talked about the dangers of 1.5 degrees Celsius warming over pre-industrial. Well, guess what? It's already increased 1.2 degrees. So what she's actually saying is we cannot let it get 0.3 of a degree centigrade warming. That's half a degree Fahrenheit. And really, since this show started, your office and that you're in right now has probably increased or decreased by that amount, half a degree Fahrenheit. Almost every given day, it increases by that amount between 11 a.m. and noon every day. And if you're that worried about half a degree Fahrenheit and warming, move 19 miles farther north if you're in the northern hemisphere, and your average temperature will drop by half a degree Fahrenheit. When you look at it that way, it's just... It's so ludicrous. People don't understand how small this is. I mean, thermostats don't even get triggered by a half a degree Fahrenheit change. It's usually somewhere a little over 1 degree Fahrenheit when a thermostat's triggered. And that's what they're talking about. Half a degree, it's crazy. So, you know, she's got a lot to learn.
Well, you know, they come out. I remember it was John Podesta during the Obama administration. He was like his chief of staff. He had said, we need the cap and trade carbon tax, you know, to pass the U.S. Senate because the weather was getting worse. And no one asked him at the time, Well, if you first of all, you can address whether weather is getting worse separately as well. But no one asked him would passing a U.S. based cap and trade carbon tax impact the weather somehow? He implied there'd be less hurricanes, less tornadoes if the U.S. Senate would only pass this bill that would start trading CO2 emissions around different companies in some kind of stock market, carbon market. What science, how do they make these kind of claims? I mean, they literally, but this is what the public hears. We hear, Congress needs to vote on this because the storms are getting worse. Like, we can improve the storms.
Well, I capture in my new book, with the last time we talked about net zero and the fact that it's just not, or that there's not a climate crisis, and there isn't a climate crisis. But in my new book, and with the CO2 coalition, we've gone beyond that. We're not just saying there's not a climate crisis, but rather the modest warming and more CO2 is just hugely beneficial. We see by almost every metric we look at, Earth's ecosystems are thriving and prospering, and the human condition's improving because of warming and more CO2. And that we can trace this back historically. I do that in my book. Part that I really love is the close correlation between the rise and fall of temperature and the rise and fall of civilizations, to find that in the past warming periods, like we're in now, humanity and civilizations and empires arose, food was bountiful, life was good. It was the intervening cold periods that were just horrific. They were horrific, with crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation were linked to cold times, not warm times. People don't know that. And they need to silence people like me and my colleagues at the CO2 Coalition and yourself. You're not going to be getting on NPR or CBS, NBC, anything anytime soon. They need to silence us. We make a compelling case that's backed up by facts, science, and data, what's actually happening, to find out that you're not experiencing deforestation, we're experiencing reforestation. Deserts aren't expanding, they're shrinking. Crop production isn't failing, it's increasing marvelously, breaking records year after year after year. And the productivity is due to more CO2, modest warming, which lengthens growing seasons, and the use of nitrogen-based fertilizer that are derived from fossil fuels. Those are the three legs of the stool that are driving crop productivity. Again, breaking records year after year. Right. Crop production is greatly outpacing population growth. But you wouldn't know that by listening to the regular mainstream media. So we see this. We see tornadoes for sure are definitely in a strong decline, particularly the big F3, F4, F5 tornadoes. Hurricanes aren't increasing in strength or number. But of course, they pull these tricks like, well, the number of named hurricanes are increasing. Well, yeah, they are. They're naming them a lot earlier. What was a tropical depression that never got a name? Now they're naming it right away. So it's this false narrative of a contrived increase of named hurricanes, when in fact hurricanes themselves are, there's no indication either increasing or decreasing. And we see this, for example, natural disasters are also in decline. Since 2000, they've declined, this is the UN data, have declined some 10% since the year 2000. Severe weather-related deaths are declining. And cold kills 15 to 20 times as many people as heat. Knowing that, you could safely say that global warming will save lives. And it is saving lives. But, people's heads explode when you say that. You're not allowed to say that. Well, yes, we are. We can back it up with science, facts, and data about the huge benefits of modest warming and more CO2.
Now, what you're saying is contrary to my email list. I get an email from Al Gore, Climate Reality, and everything you're saying doesn't add up to what they claim. I mean, they spend all their time, and the climate activists, not just Al Gore, but the media and everyone else, and they literally will tell us everything you just said about food. They say that there's going to be massive impacts on food. There's going to be massive impacts on our economy. There's going to be massive impacts on, you know, global, you know, crop production, and they base it all on these climate models. So what's wrong with these climate models? You know, we hear from like the Associated Press, these are the most sophisticated climatological models ever produced. They're done on supercomputers and they're predicting this dire, grim future. Don't you believe in science, Mr. Redstone?
I follow the science, and that's why we know that, you know, that the climate models overpredict warming, according to Dr. John Christie, University of Alabama in Huntsville, 2.5 to 3 times too much warming. There are so many factors that go into this, and guess what? They don't include the sun, which is a big factor in warming. And the other thing are clouds, that Dr. John Clouser now sits on our board at the CO2 Coalition. He's the 2022 Nobel laureate. And his big push is they just don't include clouds in the models. And think about this. If you're outside on a July day, sunny day, and a cloud goes over, the temperature can easily drop 6, 7, 8 degrees when that cloud goes over, and then it passes and it rises back up. But they think about that. They don't include clouds in these models. Or if they do, they're not representative to the amount that they should be. So we know for sure, taking those models, plugging in the amount of CO2 increase we've had, we know for sure the actual temperature that's changed, going back to 1980 or so, in the last 44 years, we know that these temperature models are what they call reading hot. They're over predicting the amount of temperature. And using that, they're coming up with scenarios of just incredible temperatures not too far in the future.
How do you think they got it reversed? You know, back in the 70s, they were warning of, you know, the fossil fuels were blocking out the sun and creating man-made cooling and the aerosols. And they actually wanted very similar Green New Deal style proposals back then. They were talking about treaties, sovereignty limit. But, you know, you have groups today like Bill McKibben, 350.org, I think is the name of the group. And their whole goal is to roll back CO2 levels to this magical number of 350 parts per million. So the question is, why, how did they get this so wrong? If warming equals life and warming equals peace, prosperity, and cold times would be avoided, why have we become a nation and a world where everyone's wishing we could go back to colder times?
Yeah, well, when your paycheck relies on on having global warming be actual and a climate crisis, pretty motivated to find a climate crisis. And we see that you can't get papers, but I just looked at a paper. We're doing a paper on nutrition and CO2. And the paper, it's a wonderful paper, wonderful. Just touting the benefits of how carbon dioxide increases are just fueling agricultural productivity. And then the very last paragraph, they have to say it. Well, but in the future, global man-made warming from increases in CO2 will devastate agricultural productivity. Everything in the entire paper was contrary to that. But they wouldn't have gotten this paper published unless they have to bend the knee and toe the company line. They have to bend the knee to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the UN. These people, their jobs, their careers, publications, all depend on them, again, bending the knee to a man-made climate crisis. And we're not going to do it. I know you're not. I'm not going to do it. We don't give an inch on this. We have these people that are erstwhile allies of mine that will go unnamed that, you know, they say, well, there's a problem that needs solved, but they're doing it wrong. We don't need to spend $3.5 trillion. We just need to spend $850 billion. No, they say not one red cent, not one penny should be spent in the pursuit of solving a non-existent problem.
Their
solutions in search of this non-existent problem will actually be contrary to the human condition, contrary to humanity. It will harm our agricultural productivity. And it's these things, the unintended consequences of things like geoengineering are just, they could be catastrophic to do these things. And We need to fight this tooth and nail. And I think people are waking up, Mark. I'm very optimistic. My people here at the CO2 Coalition, they're tired of me saying it, but I continue to say we are winning. And I think we are. Because you see it every week, every day, more and more people doubting this climate crisis narrative and pushing back. And I think they've overreached. Everything that happens, they're trying climate change and man-made warming. I mean, last year it was increasing toenail fungus was because of climate change.
The Washington Post climate solutions reporter about 6 weeks ago, they actually have a climate solutions reporter, reported that people should be literally saving the hair sweepings at a barbershop, the cut clippings at the barbershop floor, because they think making clothing from human hair will make, first of all, you're not getting it from animal, which requires agriculture, land, emissions. And secondly, you're not getting it from anything fossil fuel-based clothing, which of course requires fossil fuels, CO2 emissions. They want hair made from, woven from human hair, clothing made from human hair. Would that, if we did face a climate crisis, would wearing a hair shirt save the planet?
You're not going to find me wearing a hair shirt, I can tell you that. But, you know, they're probably opposed to enslaving the sheep and enslaving the cattle, you know. It's ridiculous. Hey, Mark, one thing, I know we're going to have to go here in a minute, but I wanted to talk about Carville's comment.
Sure.
You know, I think because of Bidenomics inflation, that instead of dragging a dollar through a trailer park, would have to be at least a 20 these days.
That's right.
might be more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a lot more than that. And, that same smear machine that you described there with Carvel is the same one that calls you a science denier, calls me a science denier, which, you know, and you mentioned that how you can't get on mainstream media anymore. I mean, Scott Pelley, the former CBS News anchor, actually said, I will not have a climate denier on CBS News for the same reason I won't have a Holocaust denier. He made a direct equivalent between Holocaust denial and climate denial. Do you think that ideology that controls our corporate media is ever going to break anytime soon within our lifetime, or are they going to go down with this ship?
Well, they might individually go down with the ship, but like I say, I see a huge turnaround in just about everybody, random people that I talk to, not just people are of my ilk or that I hang with. It's just when I travel a lot, as you know, and I just in restaurants, and of course it always gets around, what do you do? And I promote the truth about climate change. And people are fascinated. They're just thirsty for this information about the facts and the science and the data. And I often tell people to get on, download the smartphone app that I developed. It's free. Yes. It's got 60 charts. It's at the App Store, Google Play. You search for inconvenient facts. It's got that. I sourced that for the magic simulator as part of this app that tells you for the United States, for the industrial world. If you're in Australia, look for industrial nations of the world. What happens at very 10, 80, 60, 40, 20, 0% reductions in CO2, what does it do to the temperature? And it's incredibly small. What we're doing is tiny, especially when China, India, the BRICS nations are all, especially China and India, are just going gangbusters, mining more coal, burning more coal for electricity. I think Prime Minister Modi in India is a good man. I think he wants best for his people. And he's got a goal of electrification of his country. He's got some 600 million people living in energy poverty without electricity. I don't think we can say that President Xi in China is a good man. I'm not going to go that far. But I think his goal is he wants to build an industrial economic juggernaut. And he knows to do that. For electricity, it needs to be abundant, reliable, and affordable. And he knows he can't get abundant, reliable, and affordable energy from just wind and solar. It's got to be coal. It's got to be nuclear. It's got to be natural gas fired. But China, I'm not going to say unfortunately, but I've spoken China a couple of times on shale gas back when I was involved in the shale gas revolution, and China just wasn't getting it, mainly because they don't have private, they don't have the capitalist system there to drive the innovation that's needed to develop natural gas reserves out of the shale gas like we have in the Marcellus, the Utica, in the Permian Basin, developing huge reserves of both oil, natural gas liquids, and natural gas. America is truly the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, and we need to make that. We can power the world with our natural gas here.
All right, we have to take a break. We're talking with Gregory Wrightstone, the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, author of A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.
Not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
I know kids worry about a lot of things. Getting enough food to eat shouldn't be one of them. Through a nationwide network of food banks, Feeding America serves virtually every community in the United States. See how you can help your community. Visit feedingamerica.org.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Examining the issues. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're continuing our discussion with Gregory Wrightstone, the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, author of the brand new book, A Very Convenient Warming, How Modest Warming, More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. All right, it's Earth Day, Greg, and we have the media doing all their stories. Last year, Time Magazine called for Earth Day to become a national religious holiday, not making that up. What are your Earth Day message, and what are your thoughts on making Earth Day a religious holiday?
Well, I think that it is a religion for some, or maybe you could call it the climate cult that needs they need to worship Gaia and Mother Earth. It's all our fault. Anything that goes wrong, innately each person needs to worship something, or needs to have something to. A goal that they're doing good. What could be more significant than saving the planet? I mean, that's driving what they're doing. They're saying, I'm helping to save the planet. It's a noble goal. They're wrong, but it's a noble goal. And that's what's driving so many of these people. As far as me and Earth Day, I enjoy living a high carbon lifestyle. And if you also are living a high carbon lifestyle, you might want to consider just turning that gas guzzling SUV on, park it out front, just let it run all day, because what you'll be doing is you'll be providing more life-giving CO2 to the atmosphere. Every time you breathe out, also, by the way, as you know, we inhale about 400 parts per million and exhale 40,000 parts per million. So I'm doing my part, and you are too right now, by just living and breathing in your studio. So if you are living that high carbon lifestyle, I'll tell you, sleep well. There is no climate crisis. And right now, I tell you what I'm working on, Mark, is speaking of sleep well, we have a series of children's books that are science-based. Yes. We've got what's called the CO2 Learning Center, co2learningcenter.com. I'm starting the first book of a new series. I'm calling it the Sleep Well series. And it's taking animals. The first one is Chloe the clownfish sleeps well at night. And we Chloe lives on the Great Barrier Reef. And she was told at school that, of course, the oceans were heating up and acidifying, and that she and her friends that lived on the Great Barrier Reef were in great danger. They might have to move. It was just terrible. And so we use this as a vehicle to have her retired professor come in and talk to her. And so then she ends up not worried anymore. She's been told the truth. And actually, we collaborated with Dr. Peter Ridd, who you know, I'm sure, or at least are familiar with Peter. He's probably the top coral reef expert in the world. Yeah. So we're going to do a whole series of these. Next is Polly the polar bear. And I've got Oscar the sea otter. And we're having some of our biologists from California that are working with us on. So we're getting the science right. Again, it's communicating this message to children in an interesting way that's just captivating. And it's an important part of our outreach with children, because we were concerned about science education in America, and we said, let's do something about it. And we saw that our children were being indoctrinated. They were being taught groupthink. They were being taught consensus science, not true science. They weren't being taught critical thinking skills or the scientific method. The scientific method has been erased from our schools. We helped get it back in North Carolina, thanks to member John Droz. We're trying to do this. We're going to a series of educational conferences over the summer. We just spoke in Pennsylvania to 400 people with an hour-long workshop on the state of science education in America and Pennsylvania. And so I'm so proud of what we've been able to accomplish here. Again, that's co2learningcenter.com. You can get lesson plans for all of our videos and books free for download. There's no cost. And we want to do something to fight back against this horrible indoctrination of our students.
And I think that is probably, I don't want to judge the rest of your work, but that's probably one of the most important things I think any organization can do, because they are being indoctrinated from kindergarten through college, not just in school, but in pop culture. And that is very important. And I've seen some materials, and that is spot on. Keep up that fight, because kids today have been truly, you hate to use the word brainwashed, but that's the word, brainwashed on this.
They are.
Sure, go ahead.
Some of the other things we've got going on, our main mission, and has been since we were formed in 2015, is to do the science, get the science right. We publish scholarly papers by some of the top scientists in the world. Right now, we're just completing one on the effects of increased atmospheric carbon dioxide on crop nutritive values, the nutrition. There's the argument, well, it's hard to argue that CO2 is not driving agricultural productivity. It's just so obvious and so huge. So what they're saying now is, well, you're growing more, but the nutritional value of these crops are diminished. And that's their whole, and there's not been anything written about it. We've got this new paper coming out very shortly, probably as soon as next week, dealing right with that. And we have some of the top scientists in the world, a Paraguayan agronomist, Albrecht Bletzel, has teamed up with Dr. William Happer and some others to create this rebuttal against this notion of more CO2 leading to reduced nutrition. And we've got a couple other ones in the pipeline. So not only are we doing that high-level science like that, we want to communicate and reach the students. And if you're a parent, a grandparent, great-grandparent, maybe you might be watching this, but you're probably concerned about your children's education. And so we want to do this. We want to promote critical thinking skills and the scientific process.
All right, I'm going to hit you with some hard science now, Greg. This is from a peer-reviewed study at the end of 2023. I'm not making this up. Peer-reviewed study, human breathing contributes to global warming. Human respiration has a net warming effect on the atmosphere, published in the journal PLOS-1. And their claim is that humans contribute 0.1% of the UK's greenhouse gas emissions. They base this study on investigation of emissions of methane, nitrous oxide, and human breath from 104 adult volunteers in the UK. And this passed peer review. So you were telling us about human breath earlier. Well, apparently human breath contributes to warming. And they went one step further, and then I'll let you comment. Africans' breath contributes more than Asians' breath to warming, and women's breath has more warming agents than men's breath. That's what the science says. How do you refute the science? Go ahead.
I don't even know where to start and how to unpack that. It's so crazy. Well, that the reason they published it in PLOS is it couldn't be published in any well-accepted scientific journal. It's probably the case. There's a lot of just errors. Science has taken a huge hit over the last 20, 30 years with just terrible science being promoted. We saw it with Dr. Michael Mann that I'm scared to write. I've got the next book of mine already written, but my wife is just threatening me because Michael Mann is so litigious that
yes. He's GoFundMe right now. Let me just tell you that.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get a pseudonym. I'll call myself Mark Morano.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll publish it like that. And so it's just terrible, terrible, terrible science. I mean, Michael Mann's still a respected climate scientist, even though it's proved that the science that he used was just incorrect, using bristlecone pine trees, tree ring studies. And that's what his studies were based on. It was just absolutely not suitable. And I like Mark Stein,
I hope you have speed dial for your lawyer. Everything you're saying now, you better be dialing half the numbers for your lawyer as you're saying this.
No, that's all based. That was the Wegman report was concluded the same thing there. So I can back that up with science, facts, and data. But I like what Mark Stein had to say about Dr. Michael Mann. Are you listening, Dr. Mann? He called it the hockey stick is what we're talking about. He said it was a reconstruction of temperature using proxies with two problems, proxies and the reconstruction. Other than that, you can take it to the bank. That was Mark Stein on that. And it pretty summarized it very well. And we should all donate something to Mark Stein's GoFundMe page.
Yeah. Well, one thing we learned in the trial is Michael Mann never paid 1 cent for any of these lawsuits, and they go on for years. Even if he loses, he doesn't pay the judgment ruled against them. So he has nothing to lose. He just sues and sues, and he has anonymous donors funding this, probably some billionaire foundation. All right, we're just about out of time. Final message, Dr. Gregory Wrightstone, you got about 25 seconds. What is your message for Americans as Joe Biden is now, apparently, according to mainstream media reports, about to declare a national climate emergency, bypass democracy, give him 130 wartime powers by which to invoke climate measures to save us?
Sleep well. There is no climate crisis. Enjoy the warmth and the more CO2 and the food that's being provided by our changing climate. Enjoy the high carbon lifestyle. Go forth, eat, drink, and be merry, because life is good and getting better.
All right. So, and back to that human breath, do women have more hot air than men? How about that? I'll get you in problems with your wife now. Is that possible?
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that.
All right. That human breath study I was referencing. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Gregory Wrightstone, author of A Very Convenient Warming, A modest warming and more CO2 are benefiting humanity, and the executive director of CO2 Coalition. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it. And this is Unleashed with Mark Morano. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.